I'm going to sort of repeat what I said. It's nice to actually see you in real life here in your amazing studio, broadcasting around the world.
You've been with us before, but we did it by telephone.
We did it by telephone. Yeah. I was up in Canada, and
yeah.
You told me, and we were on air.
You are world famous, and you're world famous for creating something or discovering something called the Hutchison Effect. And I was reading today more things about the Hutchison Effect. And basically, with the Hutchison Effect, you reproduced a lot of the same stuff, same results, that Tesla was experiencing.
Quite a bit of new and exotic, long-forgotten technologies, I feel.
And it didn't take... a lot of real high-tech whiz-bang-gee-whiz good-golly-miss-molly electronics, did it?
No. All spark gap up to vacuum tube machinery.
Mm-hmm. Which is basically the vacuum tube, I believe, by the middle, actually, of Tesla's experimentation is when they started coming up with the vacuum tube, didn't they?
Yeah, it was called, I believe, the Edison effect. Then that effect was brought into a element called a vacuum tube, a triode, which then, of course, went into radio communications and other unique amplifications.
We are sitting here tonight using descendants of Tesla technology to talk to the world. He invented the electricity that's running these lights, the alternating current. He invented a lot of the principles that are used in the transmission of electrical signals. Everything right down to radar and cell phones, people can thank Tesla. And yet, most people don't know who he is. You know, I talked with my mom this week. She lives over in the Dallas, Texas area. I told her you were going to be on the show, and I mentioned Tesla in that conversation, and she didn't know who Tesla was. Many people. She knew Edison, you know, but many people out there have been fed the mushroom diet. You know, manure.
Yeah.
Do you hear music? Where is that coming from?
Under my leg.
Oh, okay. That's your telephone.
Yes.
Okay. But many people are fed that manure diet, and they've become mushrooms. They think Edison invented electricity, and they think that Marconi invented the radio, and in both cases, the electricity that we use today was invented by Tesla, and Tesla invented radio, and that has been adjudicated in the Supreme Court of the United States now, and they said, yes, indeed, Marconi's stuff was based on Tesla's patents, and so he's the one that actually invented it. I notice you've got a star on your hat. Folks, can you see that? Can you see that star?
Yeah.
Let's zoom in on that. Oh, okay, well, let's see.
Holding steady.
Let's see. There we go. Look at that star. What do you think about that? Tell us the story of the star.
Well, one of my favorite places since as a kid has been the Alamo, and I got a chance to visit it, actually, en route to Arizona here. And I took my tiny camera with me and videotaped and took pictures, which people were saying, you're not allowed to take pictures. And I said, okay. I just ignored them and kept taking pictures. And I'm going to return and take more pictures. And I got my little souvenir here.
Uh-huh.
I wish it was a brown bass musket or a Pennsylvanian rifle, but oh well, I didn't. They're in behind glass, and I have a bunch of those things up north anyway.
Did you see the sword mounted on the wall in the Alamo?
Yeah.
It says, never drawn in anger. It's engraved, never drawn in anger, never sheathed in cowardice. pretty cool, isn't it?
It's an incredible place.
I wouldn't mess with Texans. I really wouldn't. I'll tell you. Do you know how many Texas Rangers there were in the original group?
And pull the count of...
There were six.
Six.
Imagine six guys to do law enforcement throughout the Republic of Texas. Texas is gigantic. There were six guys. I went to the Texas Ranger Museum. We'll get back to Hutchison Effect in just a moment. But I went to the Texas Ranger Museum on one vacation. And they show you a film. And the shortest report they ever got was written by report from a Texas Ranger, written in pencil on a cigarette rolling paper. And it had the date, the Ranger's name. It had the suspect's name. It said, offense, disturbing the peace, disposition, had to kill him. He was mean as hell. And that was the report.
simplistic report.
Yeah.
At that time period.
Yeah.
It's an amazing time. I'm a real, have a great interest for American history. I always have since I've been a kid, so. I don't know.
Well, I got a little interest in Hutchison history. Let's go back to 1979.
Okay.
And then we'll come up to present day in your new book. But in 1979, you started wowing the world.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe before then, but that's where I've pegged in. And I said, well, okay, that looks like that's where the Hutchison effect really started kind of going public and people knew about it. Along the way, you have had your laboratory raided.
Mm-hmm.
You've had your laboratory confiscated.
Mm-hmm.
You've had your laboratory then given to Lockheed Martin Skunk Works.
Mm-mm.
So, and according to what I read, that's been confirmed by Colonel John B. Alexander.
I worked with John Alexander in 83 for a company or part of the U.S. government called INSCUM. Major Stubbledean, part of that group. And after that, it was classified. Then a year or two later, after I put on national television the effects a few times, then they called in McDonnell Douglas Aerospace to film everything. And then they called in the Canadian government to film everything, and then all of the reports except for the McDonnell Douglas report is public, while the other ones they claim is they destroyed the videos and documentation to it.
Well, journalist and author Nick Cook has written that this story about your laboratory being confiscated and given to Lockheed Martin for research, for their research, was confirmed to him by a high-ranking friend in Skunk Works, Boyd Bushman. I think Boyd Bushman's known to all of our audience. Retired Lockheed Martin senior engineer, also has confirmed that this was true in an interview that he did in contained in Nick Cook's book called The Hunt for Zero Point. So there are people, John, that think those kind of things don't happen. That's just in the movies.
Oh, they happen a lot in the black world. It's amazing what is going on in that whole area. These things do happen.
I think they also arrested you on a bogus gun charge having to do with a, or they threatened to arrest you or something, anyway, having to do with an antique gun that you had.
Oh, it was a pile of antique firearms I had in 2000. I was buying them, and the police, eight of them arrived, took all the guns, called in all the engineers to check out what I'm doing in that apartment of mine. Then it passed all inspections, fire inspection, structural integrity inspections. So after all of that, which I have it all in writing, the police then returned the entire gun collection.
So you got it all back?
I got it all back.
You didn't get your laboratory back?
No, I got the lab, was not even touched. They took a lot of pictures of it. But the main lab in 1990 was taken. All 22 tons of it was taken. And they built a fence around it saying no trespassing. But luckily, the media did cover the story. And then later, they blocked the television media. So I have newspaper clippings of front page news, Vancouver Sun, February 22, 1990, showing the lab and pictures of the lab and the fence and trespassing. And it said, headline news, front page, ministry secretly builds PCB site in Surrey. And then it goes into inventor goes to ground. At that time, I was in Europe, and they took the lab, and it just vanished without a trace, basically.
So when you came back from Europe, it was gone?
It was gone. I was handed back my firearms collection at that time, as well as a bunch of test equipment, which I thought, well, I sold it off. Shouldn't have sold it off, but I did. And I was going to return to Europe and pack it in, but other events happened with Japan and some other countries, which led me into rebuilding a lab in an apartment,
mm-hmm.
which was quite an engineering feat because I reinforced everything with chains and turnbuckles and boards.
Now, do you still have that lab?
Oh, that lab is fully operational. The last demonstration was in 2008 for CNN.
Okay, now, folks, if you want to see some pretty amazing video of the Hutchison effect, all you need to do is click on John's picture on my website, and it will take you to his website. And he's got videos there that you can, and a lot of reports and things, but some videos where you can watch what we're talking about. John, you engaged in something that really, really caught my attention, and we talked about this the last time mm-hmm. that you were on the show, and that was a reenactment or reproduction of the Philadelphia experiment.
Oh, that's fun. Yes.
Tell us about it.
Well, I did that in 2006 because I was contacted by Robert Drake and Kevin Albar in Hollywood that they were preparing for me to do a TV series of 13 episodes. And one of the main ones would be the Philadelphia experiment. And I had a friend of mine, Ron Milaloni, BAE Systems, it's a military subcontractor, who helped me, and we're planning to do this demonstration of a 4-foot model ship. So I started out with a foot long little ship, about that long, Navy ship, in a tub of water, and I noticed that when filming it, that it seemed to phase in and out, and I can't say if that's really what's happening because of the camera could be doing that itself because it kept going off the camera. But there was lightning flying off of it, and the water started levitating up off the out of the container. That was 2006, so I thought, that's a cool experiment. I'll leave it because there's so many film crews coming around that I could actually incorporate that at the same time as I did with the levitation. So anytime a film crew came around, then I'd turn that on and have that activated along with the levitation.
What was the response of the film crews?
They were a little concerned, some of them, that will this harm us? And I said, no, it shouldn't harm you. It's just okay. And their response seemed to be quite casual. One of the longest demonstrations with the largest number of crew was with Rob Simone
mm-hmm.
and his group, along with Polar Shift Films. And they were filming a 15 to 20-minute levitation of a can floating in the air, and that hasn't aired yet. But as well, I had the water levitating up out of the container too, and that is still in the can, all of that great footage. However, I did some for China TV, Japanese TV, as well as History Channel, which is aired, called Earth Black Holes. I never seen it, but be fun to get a copy of that sometime, and then.
All right, now we've got a couple of minutes here before we hit our first break or our next break.
Mm-hmm.
what sort of forces are at work when you levitate something like water? I mean, it can't be electromagnetic, can it?
No, none of this is electromagnetic. We went over this decades ago because none of these operators could do that. So the combination of the operators perhaps tapping into zero-point energy and causing these effects, which brings me up to a news release I saw where DARPA, DARPA, is getting a grant to explore zero-point energy as well as new types of anti-gravity research. I think that's a link there. And I know it's a link in there. And then, gee, they get a lot of money for that. Okay.
So they take Tesla's technology and yours, and they get a bunch of money, and they try to figure out how Tesla and Hutchison got it done, right?
Probably, yeah, because $50 million is a lot of money for that.
Yeah. You know, the reason I bring that up about what kind of energy was specifically because you've been doing a lot of writing lately about zero point. And I saw a video where Boyd Bushman was asked something about your data. Didn't seem to make sense. He said, well, data doesn't have to make sense. It just has to be accurate.
That's Boyd.
Yeah. No, all right. We have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. This evening. And we are talking with him about this zero-point energy. As we went to break, John, I was saying that Boyd Bushman said, I saw this in a video where he said, talking about your data, he said, well, you know, data doesn't have to make sense. It just has to be accurate. And obviously, if you discover something new, that doesn't make sense. It's something new. We have to get new sense about it. Doesn't that make sense? If it's brand new, it's not going to fit the molds that we already have.
That's correct, yes.
John, zero-point energy, tell us what it is.
It's been around. It's the Casimir effect, discovered a long time ago by Henry Casimir. Two metal plates that seem to put out more energy when they come together. It is now many decades into the future here where the military-industrial complex is the hottest thing for them for an energy source. And I feel that they already have it and are experimenting with it. And what it is background jitter of the at 0 degrees Kelvin of energy. And that energy has been theorized, postulated by famous scientists like Feynman, Richard P. Feynman, and many others to be a light bulb size. Amount of it could power the Earth energy needs for 100 years.
Wow.
Yes, big wow there. And DARPA just got funded to research that to combine it with anti-gravity. And a news release I saw on Yahoo, I believe it was Yahoo News.
Anti-gravity.
Mm-hmm.
People say it's not possible.
Oh, wow.
But I have seen propane tanks floating in your lab. So, and other things, is that based on the zero point energy principle, or is it?
I think it is based on the zero point energy principles because radio waves, electrostatic high voltage could not do that on their own. They never could. Of course, you can get lifter technology, but not this directed energy levitation effects. And there was a paper written on it in 1983, which I have around on it, and it incorporated equations by René Louis Vallée of France, actually, that...
John, I want us to get into your new book. It's called Mind Bending, The Hutchison Files, 1981 to 1995. This is what the book looks like, folks. And it's got comments here by Colonel John Alexander, Harold Puthoff, you know, this print, you really should print on the back of your book for old guys like me. I can't read some of this print. It's so small on the back. But
that was done by my colleague, George Hathaway, in Toronto.
George, he must have good eyes.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, what's in this book? What is this about?
I guess mostly it's George's adventures with me and his findings and results. There is a lot missing in there, like all the diagrams and metallurgical tests and analysis that I have in separate documentation from George.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that George is, I guess, in a bit of a rush to write that, but covers the early years and...
Well, and it's got some, I don't know if folks can see this, but it's got some nice color photographs in there of those early years.
That would be Colonel Alexander and Los Alamos photographs.
And it shows different people in your lab, mm-hmm. and you in your lab. You looked pretty much as you look now, just younger.
Yes.
Yeah. You haven't put on much weight.
I hope not.
You still smoke the pipe?
I got away from smoking pipes when I got into airports. They didn't allow pipe smoking in airports, and I got in the habit.
Okay.
I take a lot of vitamins to try and offset the effects of the toxins that smoking gives to you.
What are you working on now?
Actually working with grassroots folks in Minnesota on the energy power cells, which would be actually tapping into zero-point energy and other energies to convert all that random noise into workable direct current.
I watched a documentary the other night online, and this documentary has to do with a number of people that have come up with various devices that they claim are putting out more energy than they're consuming in the production of that energy. The documentary refers to this as zero point, but it isn't zero point, is it? It's over unity.
Over unity type devices.
Yeah. There were a couple of them that looked, and even the scientist involved, and Hal Puthoff was one of the people in the documentary, said, well, you know, it looks like it's doing it. You know, we've got to put better measurements to this, you know, and really see, but it looks like it's doing it. Here's my question to you, since you're working with zero-point energy. In that documentary, they said, imagine there was a time when armies used spears, swords, and arrows, and they killed a lot of people. Then we discovered how to take a baseball-sized piece of atomic material and destroy a city.
Mm-hmm.
He said, it's just absolutely awesome. And he said, if we ever really discover how to get to zero-point energy and harvest it, you will have in your hands the power to destroy the planet instantly. Is that true?
I would say, yes, it is true. Because in the early 80s, before zero-point, they were working on making antimatter at Los Alamos Natural Laboratories. And that is extremely powerful material.
Antimatter.
Antimatter. Which, oddly enough, had anti-gravity properties, so it got classified. But I have the documentation to it. It was classified, and I couldn't get the reports I wanted from that particular SBIR program solicitation. Which I thought would be quite interesting to study the subatomic science of it, but I couldn't.
What benefit would there be from the production of antimatter?
A new energy source, anti-gravity properties. I think a milligram or 10 milligrams will take a space shuttle and power it right around a full, complete orbit and landing. So you got a tiny pinhead size of material they'll do all the energy of all the rocket fuel to, for a payload to the space shuttle.
So you could take a coffee cup of this stuff and fly to the moon and back.
Probably a pinhead of it.
Something that powerful, though, would be immensely difficult to control, wouldn't it?
Yes, they had some problems down there where the samples they did make, which cost a lot of money, like millions of dollars to make small amounts of it, would explode and sound like firecrackers. And that's just a few atoms of it. Go bang off in, into the laboratory. And that.
How could they contain antimatter? Because at least from what I have heard, matter and antimatter will not coexist.
They're thinking of using special magnetic bottles, which I think is kind of odd. Well, what's magnetism? Is it an antimatter or ordinary matter, or is it no matter?
Well, and see, that also, that same question is debated about electricity. Mm-hmm. Is it matter or not? Mm-hmm. And some people say it is, and some people say it isn't. I had a professor who had a PhD in physics who said, we know just about everything there is to know about electricity, except what it is. And he said, you know, it just may be the dividing line between matter and spirit. And this was a PhD in physics that said that. And I thought that was pretty esoteric, coming from someone like that.
Maybe. I think spirit is involved in this, and thoughts and energy and creation of them from the mind out into space, creating positive environmental things or negative, depending. I think it's all interrelated, really. I was experimenting a little bit with through the internet, actually manifesting things somewhere else. Sort of not really trying hard, but noticing a lot of things would come along when I started thinking about them, would appear somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Situations. So I'm thinking, well, since they're getting into quantum physics and mind, that perhaps there's something to this. There has been some very interesting documentaries on Discovery Channel about mind interaction and dimensions.
And then you get into all the questions about, are we, with our mind, encoding at the quantum level, mm-hmm. or is the quantum level encoding our mind?
I think we're progressing ahead and learning more all the time
mm-hmm.
in that realm. How far we're going to get, I have no idea, because so many other external negative forces are at work, like the wars and then the economy and all kinds of different problems that seem to cause havoc and that.
You know, I don't know how old you are, but you're in my age group, and we remember the heydays of the hippies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the flower children. And they used to say, what if they gave a war and nobody came? But imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, imagine if political leaders, that's who starts all the wars. Okay, no warrior starts a war. He has to put his life on the line once somebody else starts it. But he doesn't start it. What if they gave a war, political leaders said, we're going to have a war, and all the armies on the planet said, nah, we're busy.
We're busy. We're
busy.
Yeah.
We got to take a break, and we'll be back right after this. We'll see if the software works. Welcome back. We're talking with John Hutchison, and it is, I'll say again, quite a privilege for me to have John with us in the studio tonight. He's visiting in the Phoenix area and dropped by, and I'm absolutely delighted that he is here. Let me make sure I've got your mic up. I'm having to do a couple of different steps tonight that I don't normally do, because we normally do this on the telephone.
That's
so
right.
It's not extra steps, they're just different steps. But John, you're working on zero-point energy with folks in Minnesota, you said.
That's right.
Okay. What is it that you're trying to accomplish?
Make actually a independent power source of any size that can be used to power, let's say, computers, cell phones, or entire houses. Utilization of capturing zero-point energy. Now, I have perhaps a competitor, if you want to call it that, Dr. Franklin E. Mead, who has a patent on the zero-point energy collector, 1996, December 31. And as I understand it, IBM bought up all the patent rights to it. Another person working in the same area is Dr. Marcus Reed, who has power cells, small ones, that are still in operation and putting out very small amounts of energy. But nevertheless, they seem to last forever, let's say.
You, years ago, created some, I'll call them batteries.
Mm-hmm.
And these batteries were made of just stuff you find laying around.
That's right.
And they are still working, are they not?
They are still working, according to my friends that still own them. My ex in India has one. She's a filmmaker. And some months ago she said, oh yeah, I still have it. It still puts out energy, like a half a volt, under a milliamp per cubic inch of material.
How does it charge itself?
It just grabs environmental energy and converts it into direct current.
Is that zero-point energy?
In part, it's zero-point energy, and I think it's also picking up radio waves as well as gravimetric variations from the moon, as well as thermal and vibration.
So anything, any kind of energy, it's
takes,
grabs it and
converts it into direct current.
Wow.
So Nancy Lazarian has really brought it up to now, in some cases, she's got it up to like amps in a few experiments she's doing.
Why couldn't production of those batteries be, why couldn't that be the future of energy to replace fossil fuels?
It could very well be that. We worked on a grant in 2005 to the Planetary Association for Clean Energy in Ottawa, Canada, who was going to get $5 million to us to go into production on these. But whatever happened there, the funding stopped, and nothing ever happened to that. So my other funders were actually from Germany, $40,000 just to experiment and work on them. And then Japan put in $140,000 some years prior to that. But it never got grabbed or never locked into factory production, which I wanted to do. Latest info was as to work with Charles Bombardier of Canada, a friend of mine who's into Segway and he builds all these trains and things. He's in Canada and that kind of thing, but that, nothing yet on that. That was the fall in with the Hollywood people, Kevin Albar and Robert Drake, and they're going to have this reality-based TV show. But it's, I think what happened was economic times slammed into Hollywood, as well as other people, and nobody has any money around anymore to do that. But I've been hearing on the news of late, somebody on actually 60 Minutes that somebody developed a silicon wafer that is painted on one side with a material and painted on the other side with material that's supposed to produce energy from a flow of air, oxygen, or methane through this box called a bloom box. Now, I just saw that that is basically reversed engineering that was used for NASA for creating oxygen production. But again, it seems to be using an external source like oxygen or methane to power it?
Well, I can tell you how to get virtually unlimited funds for this project. What you need to do is you need to lie to as many American people as you can, cheat as many of them as you can, steal from them as much as you can, and you'll get bailout money from our government. It works.
It did work. Who could ever forget that? People were in shock.
Yeah, and then you could give yourself like a $10 million bonus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm not into that headspace, negative energy. I don't want to go into that area of negative energy. No, thanks.
I've never seen anything work quite like that worked.
It was incredible.
Okay, so how far are we from being able to go out, get into our automobiles, and drive all over town with zero-point energy? Tesla did it.
Well, he did do it, yes, a long time ago. And also T. Henry Morey did it, too. These things have made, surfaced and disappeared.
So how far are we from being able to do that?
Extremely close. Could do it probably in a month. For the military, Black Ops already has it. I know that. I get leaks. They already have the technology. They're playing around with it. Now, to get it in the public arena, all it would take is a factory and some engineers to tool up.
So the knowledge of how to build the technology
mm-hmm.
exists.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this is not futuristic in terms of the technology.
No.
It's only futuristic in terms of production.
Yeah, basically. I would say that. I brought it up many times that all these things have to be made into power cell, tiny power cells put in series and parallel in a block.
How big would the apparatus be to power an automobile?
I would say in the beginning it would be fairly large, maybe a couple of yards big, like the first computer. Then it would be scaled down. So we need engineers that can make proper measurements of the materials to be exact. That's the problem, is that everyone that's made is not exact. The measurements of all the materials has to be all the same in weight and composition, so they work in unison.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you have batteries and you have one battery that's not right, it seems to affect the whole line of batteries.
So let's say that tomorrow the Congress here in the United States, and by the way, folks, you do know that's the ball game. It isn't Obama or any other president that's been there. The president isn't the ball game, nor is it the Senate. It's the guys who hold the purse strings, and that's Congress. It's the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules. That's Congress. So if Congress tomorrow said, all right, Hutchison, we're going to give you $20 million to go into production for these energy cells, to be used for automobiles or whatever other products, you're saying within a month you could be in production.
Mm-hmm. What the first thing I'd probably do is phone up engineer friends of mine right away and say, this is what we're stuck with here, like the grassroots people, here we are, this is what we got.
John, we have to step away for break.
Okay.
When we come back, I want to hear the story of how you would do the production, so we'll do that when we come back. We'll be back, folks. Don't go away. Rockstar of Zero Point Energy is with us in the studio tonight, and his name, of course, is John Hutchison. John, when we went away for break, you were explaining to us how you would go into production, how you could do this in a month.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I want you to have the opportunity to finish what you started.
Okay, thank you. Well, okay, if I got the funding, I would, of course, consult with the engineers I already do know that have made suggestions to me in how to put these out there into the marketplace. They'd probably come and set up exact measuring equipment to put all these power cells in exactly the same precise type of arrangements, because it does take machines and special measuring devices to do that. Then we'd work out a plan. Okay, that works. So many of these will work in a block. Then we'd go to factory tool and die makers, say, this is what we want to do. We want to make these and put them in series and parallel and make it into a block. Because the theory on them, or not the theory, but they do seem to operate over a long period of time. They don't seem to give up their energy. And the engineers and tool and die makers will say, okay, well, that's how we can do it this way, and then let's start going right into production right away.
Okay, now let me ask you this. After I ask you this, we're going to open up the telephone lines. And people are already beginning to call. So let me ask you, is there a danger of these things overproducing and exploding?
I must, to be honest, I don't know. I never had it. Well, I did have one that went wild. It was a cubic foot of material that went to 70,000 volts and then it destroyed itself, though.
So I wouldn't want to be driving my car and have 100,000 volts blow up in the back of me.
No, that's why you need the engineers that are into building these things that mm-hmm. can handle and test and then go right into production.
Are you pretty confident that it could be done safely?
Yeah, 100%.
All right, we're going to open up the telephone lines. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello, hello, hello there, John. Can you hear me good over there in the studio?
I can hear you loud and clear, sir.
Great, great, great. Before I get to the question I want to ask, I come across an interesting set of a couple of dates. You know, Nikola Tesla, he died on January 7th, 1943, and you, John, were born in October of 1945. Would you happen to be the reincarnation of Nikola Tesla?
No, how can I answer that? I don't know. Really? I'm sorry, I don't know that.
Well, the timing seems to be about right.
okay.
I see here I just finished reading The Sign and the Seal by Graham Hancock, and I see that you also made a replica of the Ark of the Covenant.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that.
I was approached by a film company in the United Kingdom for Discovery Channel, and they wanted me to build an Ark of the Covenant, which I said, sure, I'll do that. And I set out to find my team in Vancouver, Canada. I found a master wood maker who had all kinds of acacia wood on hand. I said, good, okay, you're hired. Then I went around and found my metal friends who said, we got lots of metal that you need. And okay, we're set to rock and roll, and couldn't afford the gold. But we're about 6 months in production. Built the Ark of the Covenant, tested it in a metal supermarket housing. It did work. It sent out all kinds of funny electrical storms and even entities, which was captured by our cameraman. And there was a delay of a couple of years, and it eventually aired on Discovery Channel in 2008. It was a very fun show to do. It was challenging, and the results on the grand final demonstration was beyond my wildest expectations.
Yeah, I can see the photo right now here on your website. Amazing! It kind of gives a validation to the fact that the Ark of the Covenant did once exist and probably still does. That's an amazing piece of technology, which I personally think the guy that came across that the Bible calls Moses. I think he came across some ancient blueprints from a previous civilization one of our previous civilizations that was likely wiped out about 17,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too.
All right, Kevin, thanks for the call. Interesting stuff. 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan up in Puget Sound.
Hello, Ryan.
Excellent show tonight.
Thank you.
First, I was going to ask John, is there any way you could possibly speak more into the microphone? I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing. The volume seems kind of low.
Okay. Is that sounding better?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just thought I'd point that out.
Great. What's your question or comment?
Well, you know, Kevin, let's see here. In one day, a handful of banks received $1 trillion worth of taxpayer money, and in one day, we pay only 29 cents to watch this show. I think there's something wrong here.
23 cents.
23 cents a day to watch this.
That's right.
There's something wrong here. But I wanted to ask John. John, do you have all your inventions and stuff patented? Because, you know, the way that they treated Tesla, I'd hate to see them, you know, first of all, these the congressmen and stuff in Washington, if they were to make some sort of decision to take a look at this, I think they would not want to because it would create too many jobs, and they don't want to create jobs for everybody. They would rather us all be unemployed. But I just want to ask if you had any patents, and I'll let the next caller come on because, you know, they're going to – I'd hate to see them sweep you aside and take credit for it because you know they want to put a meter on everything. So.
Yeah, I know. I don't, unfortunately, have any patents on this, any of the technologies. And I've already demonstrated it to the Canadian government as well as the U.S. government and a bit to the German and Japanese government. So,
so
it's a bit of a problem there.
Well, let me say this. Even if you have patents, and you, folks, you need to know this, you may think that protects you so that you will always be able to go public with this. If you patent something that the U.S. military decides that's important for us, they grab it, and it's your patent, but you will never be able to go public with it. It goes black, and you'll never be able to go public with it. One of the guests that's been on this show is one of the top scientists in this country. He has invented some of the really super high technology that our U.S. military has, but a lot of the things that he has invented, that he has developed and patented, disappeared into the black world, and not because he wanted it to, but because that's the way they do it. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, it's Bob from California.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. I just have a quick question for John, and then I'll hang up. It's kind of a fun question, a little bit less off the serious side, but interesting. The question is, do you think that the pyramids were built with some type of anti-gravity technology, or do you think it was done with just sheer technology they had at that time and their hands? Thank you.
Okay, nice talking to you. I think perhaps it could have been... I was approached by Discovery Channel on that issue, that they might have had a technology a long time ago to build the pyramids. To see them try and build it with sheer muscle power, seems to be, my personal view, incomprehensible. Hope that answers your question. I think they had technology back then.
One of the things that I have difficulty with, believing that they built it just with the technology available at that time, so far as we know, you know, there's tons and tons and tons of granite. They had copper tools.
Mm-hmm.
Copper won't cut granite. And, you know, and so I just find it to be a little beyond believable for someone to say, well, yeah, they cut these gigantic granite blocks with copper tools, and then they hauled them miles and miles and miles, and then they stacked them up, and they did all that in 20 years. Nonsense. Complete nonsense.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hi. Yeah, John, I was wondering, what's your take on CERN and what they're doing there, and Stephen Hawking's idea? Can they create a black hole that we could be as concerned of? And also, the Da Vinci Code, that the plot of that was that they had, you know, so, enough antimatter that they were going to blow up Rome or the Vatican or whatever. And they had a show on that said that it would take them thousands and thousands of years to create enough antimatter to make a bomb. I just wondered, what's your opinion about CERN and what they're going to do there, and if it's dangerous?
Unknown territory, creating a black hole. What if they did create a black hole and it kept getting bigger and bigger? I have a friend who is ex-NSA who's been following that quite a bit, Dr. Robert Koons, and I have to say unknown because I've seen things that will form and get bigger and bigger and bigger. So to me, it's an unknown with the black hole at CERN. And the other topic was...
What was your other topic?
What was the other topic, sorry? I was focused... antimatter production costs actually millions of dollars to make a milligram of it. So they'd have to be putting out, basically at this time anyway, unless they have another method of making it, the entire energy requirements of the United States to make any large amounts of antimatter.
All right, we have a flash message from Brian in the United Kingdom. Last week was a fine course of information, and Richard C. Hoagland did not disappoint. Contributing to the ongoing cure for lamestream limp. Okay. I thank you for that. 623-444-5889 is our main number in the studio. The toll-free number in the USA and Canada is 888-223-4599. And if you have a question or a comment for in my opinion, the undisputed king of zero-point research, this is the guy, and you need to give us a call, ask your question, make your comment. How many of you listening to me right now have said, and virtually all of you have, but think of this. How many times have you said, the government has this technology, the government is holding it back and holding us hostage, literally over a barrel of oil, for economic reasons and political reasons? Imagine what it would be like if we simply didn't need oil. Well, we will still need oil. We need it to produce plastics. We'll still need oil for various products. But if we didn't need it for fuel, just imagine what life might would be like. How much money would be back in your budget if John's inventions were running your car? How much money would you be facing foreclosure on your home now? How much would your heating bill be for the winter if you really didn't need the electric company? How much money could you put away for your kids' college, for your own retirement? Imagine what this would mean. Now, there are people that would say, well, this would destroy the economy. Well, it would if you introduced it on a broad scale and did it suddenly. But if you ease this technology in to the public and with measured expansion, it won't destroy the economy. Because the more money people have to spend, the more they spend. That makes sense, doesn't it? Let me tell you. Guy goes into a bar. He's got $20. Another guy goes into the bar, and he's got $100. They're both going to stay till closing time, but the guy with $20 will not spend more than $20, and the guy with $100 will not spend more than $100. The economy of the bar is dependent on what's in the guy's pocket. So the economy of the United States is dependent on what's in your pocket. The more that's in your pocket, the better the economy is. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Well, you were. You hung up. You go to the end of the line. 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is Stefan from Quebec City.
Hi, Stefan.
Great show. Mr. Hutchinson, I was wondering, what are the uses besides propulsion could zero-point energy be used for?
Zero-point energy, what it can be used for?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Besides propulsion, are there any other fields or disciplines that it could be used for besides propulsion?
It can be used for propulsion, could be used to power anything that uses electrical energy. Laptops, cell phones, cars, you name it.
Right.
Anything that it'll produce electrical energy for anything. And it's designed in a way where no maintenance is needed, and it's basically forever. It's a bold statement for me to say, but that's what...
Well, that was my feeling on it. I was just wondering what your feeling was. Well, thank you very much, and enjoying the show.
Real pleasure. Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks for the call. Imagine what this would do for space exploration. One of the big problems that they have right now in even thinking about a colony on Mars, of course, we've gone out of the human space exploration business. We quit. We gave up. We walked away from it. And the Chinese and the Indians are going to do it now. But imagine what this could do in solving the big problem, two big problems they have. One is water. Okay, so if you're going to have a colony on Mars, you've got to have enough water to last and for however long you're going to be there. That's a problem. And there's no possible way we can build rocket engines big enough to carry enough water for a colony for any appreciable amount of time on the surface of Mars. Mm-hmm. But water can be manufactured, but you have to have power. And everything comes back down to power. And one of the huge problems they have is figuring out how could they get enough power because, of course, it's further away from the sun than the Earth is. Therefore, you get less efficiency out of the power cells, out of the solar cells. Maybe not less efficiency, but you get less output because you have less input. All right? But would zero-point energy work on Mars?
I think of course it would work on Mars because zero-point energy is all prevalent through the entire universe.
So if we had a Hutchison unit sitting on Mars, we could power the colony, so that gives them their electricity for heat, gives them their electricity for their air purification, for their manufacture of oxygen, but also for manufacture of water, meaning then that they could do greenhouse-type agriculture and grow food because they would have water, and we already know because the scientist in Tucson, Dr. Peter Smith, that was running the Polar Lander mission on Mars, made the statement when they scooped up some of that soil and tested it. He says, just like the soil in your backyard, you could grow asparagus in it. So all we got to do is put a little water on it, and make sure it stays warm, has some energy, and you could grow food for this colony. So we're really then about a month away from being able to do a colony on Mars?
I would say yes.
How difficult would it be, honestly, to design a unit they could carry to Mars and use for these things that I just talked about?
Extremely simple. Of course, the first models would be fairly big, but then they can be scaled down.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and when we come back, a suggestion for who might be willing to fund that, since we're out of the space exploration business. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back. John Hutchison is my guest, and he's in the studio with us. And, John, the telephone lines are open, folks. John, the Chinese are going to the moon, and the Chinese are going to, they say within a decade they'll have men on the moon. They say they're going to Mars. The Indian Space Agency is going to Mars. So there's a market, even though the U.S. has gone out of the manned space exploration business.
Huge market.
For sure.
Huge market.
Yeah.
I would say that the U.S. could go to Mars, set up bases on the moon as well, start production of hydroponics, have set up even giant radio astronomy equipment as well as optical astronomy equipment, explore the universe even further. And all it takes is energy. And why not tap into nature's energy, which is zero-point energy?
I'll tell you, I don't understand. You know, they're talking about the banks are beginning to pay back some of this dirt money they got, some of this bailout. And so there's a debate about what to do with this money that's coming back in now. Okay, well, these billions that are coming back in, all they need to do is take $18 billion and give it to NASA. That would double their budget. Yeah, imagine this, $18 billion to explore the universe. $18 billion, that's what they get every year, to explore the universe. But there's multiple hundreds of billions for crooks and scoundrels. And, you know, this is insanity. This is what I talk about when I say that D.C. has gone insane. But they could take some of this money and give it to NASA. The moon program is back on. They could put a Hutchison unit on the moon and be producing oxygen and water and get into hydroponics with virtually unlimited energy. And the question, D.C., is why not? What kind of wisdom barrel are you people drinking out of? Okay, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello.
Yes, your first name and from where are you calling?
Patrick, I'm calling from Minnesota.
Yeah, Patrick.
The question I had for John was, what can a person, an average person, do to try and help you out? What can we do to make a difference? That's my question, and I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Patrick.
Very interesting question. I guess pass the word around. I think it is important for media to get to know this kind of technologies to help out, because it's not covered on CNN or ABC too much. Shows like the Kevin Smith Show is broadcasting it out there, and interesting question. Yeah, okay. Pass the word around. What can I say?
Well, let me say this. And, you know, you hear me rail against lamestream media, but this is kind of a good example for why. You see, there are very important things happening they're never going to tell you about. You have to realize that. You have to realize that all around us on this planet, there are amazing, powerful, wonderful things being discovered and invented. And lamestream media is telling you about Britney Spears and Tiger Woods and crap like that instead of bringing you the information that is really vital to the survival of mankind. I think it was Lenin that said religion is the opiate of the people. That may have been, I'm not saying it was true, but it may have in the past been true. That's not the case now. The opiate of the people right now is entertainment. You want to be entertained, and lamestream media has gone into the entertainment business. A few of you out there, well, everyone listening to the Kevin Smith Show, you're not in the crowd of mushrooms, but you do realize, don't you? You do realize that all around you, you're in a field of mushrooms, content to sit in the dark and be fed a steady stream of crap. You're not going to hear about this in lamestream media. So what can you do? I have a suggestion. What you can do is hound the absolute hell out of your local news reporters. Get it into local news. Okay? You don't need, I don't need the federal government to pat me on the head and say, yeah, that was a UFO. Okay? I mean, we know what we saw. Okay? I don't need the feds to tell me a doorknob's a doorknob. I can see that. You don't need lamestream national media. You just don't need it. If you take control of local media, just hound the absolute hell out of them to report on this stuff, and it'll start getting into the media around you. And if everybody does that, it'll be all over the country, and lamestream will be looking around saying, where did this come from? You know, these guys are dumb. They really are dumb, John.
Oh, I know. I joined U Report, Fox News, MyNBC, and I Report CNN. I've been posting videos and stuff in those reports, and they are very lame. I mean, they'll take stuff down sometimes. They actually booted me off CNN.
Oh, I can't imagine.
I put up 500 I Reports of unusual characteristics, but it's still there. It's still there. I don't know what's going on. They just gave me a warning, and the videos are still around on, if you go Google search, John Hutchison, CNN, all kinds of stuff pops up.
But you can't post anymore.
I can't post anymore, no. So that made me a little angry, so I joined U Report, Fox News, and MyNBC and ABC, and I'm now posting there. But I have a YouTube channel, too, which I just post stuff around when I've got nothing else to do.
Yeah. 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. And if you are outside of the USA and you are outside of Canada, you can send a flash message by going to my website and scroll down. Right under John's picture, you'll see a link that says flash message. Okay? John, when I said these guys are dumb, you know, here's the deal. Many of them have very high IQs.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are well-educated. But, you know, you don't have to have a high IQ, and you don't have to be well-educated in a formal sense in order to be smart. Some of the greatest inventions ever were invented by people who never went to school. How about the wheel? You mm-hmm. think the guy that invented the wheel had a PhD?
No.
No, but we all use his invention today.
That's right.
You see. And we could go on and on down through history. Now, when I say they're dumb, I'm talking about in terms of understanding what's important and what people want to hear. You know, you can see it in politics all the time. They report in a certain direction, and then a movement pops up of people, a large movement, and they go, what's this? Well, the rest of us sitting out here on the ground saw it coming. Lamestream wasn't paying attention. The same thing is true with inventions and technology. It's a surprise to them when it gets here. And they're not in touch with what people really want to hear about. Maybe that's my opinion.
I think it's a good opinion.
It's my opinion. It's just an opinion. But look, folks, I think it's important. I see, I don't care. I really don't care what's going on with Tiger Woods. That's between him and his wife. They have to work it out, and they will, one way or the other, come to resolution on that. I don't care about that. You know what I care about? I care about zero-point energy. I care about why is this being kept off the market. I care about why are we being held hostage to oil prices. Everything you do right now is connected to the price of oil. Everything. The price of your food, the price of your clothes, the price of your electricity, the price of your gasoline, the price of repairs on your house, the price of getting a loan. Everything is connected to the price of oil. Why are we being held hostage to that when technology exists that could get us off of that? Why? And then who? Who is keeping us hostage here?
Yes, I mean, I posted information on alternative health on CNN. I report, and they're asking comments. Well, what is alternative health? They never even heard of it. But I've talked to reporters who do report it for a lot of these agencies, like CNN and ABC, who quit because they're not allowed to report certain stories they want to report, so they form their own video companies and do their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like the main media is ABC, NBC, and CBS and CNN are controlled what to report, but it is very lame stuff that they want news on.
Well, we're sitting here being told we can't go back to the moon because we can't afford it. I guess that means another executive out there somewhere has to have his bonus.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can't go to the moon. And Mars is out. And sitting here in my studio, I'm looking eye to eye with someone who says the technology exists to generate all the power that you need for a colony, for all the power needs of a colony, and you could have it built in a month. Who's keeping this from happening? Well, I go back to the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And in the United States, that's the Congress. Now, they were going to issue some grants for developers of electric cars, electric automobiles. Three or four electric automobile companies applied for those grants. And these are companies that already had prototypes working. And you could see. You could test. You could experiment with them. Here they are. They just need to be developed and produced. All of the grant money went to the big three automakers.
Yes. I sort of reflect on something I did put on to CNN I report was the 1983 car that could go 250 miles.
Yeah, let's talk about that when we come back.
Okay.
We'll be back, folks, right after this. Okay, 623-444-5889 is the telephone number, or 888-223-4599. If you had a question that you would ask Tesla, what would it be? Well, he's not here. John Hutchison is. And if you have a question that you think you would ask Tesla, how about asking John? One of our callers suggested John may be the reincarnation of Tesla. So, I don't know. John says he doesn't know. What do you think, John? Is it a possibility?
As I said, I don't know. I might have been an old Navy pirate. My fascination with Alamo and Navy ships and cannons and artillery. But again, I had that with electrical machinery too, so I must be a broad mix.
Yeah, maybe a little Tesla. All right, I don't understand why we're driving cars that are burning gasoline. I don't understand, or diesel. I don't understand why we're burning heating oil to heat homes. I don't understand why we're using coal to generate electricity. If this technology is, as you say, easily deployed in a very short period of time. The only reason that I can think of is that there are a bunch of J.P. Morgans out there.
I think there is. There was a project in 1983 called a Millennium Cruiser, which could be built with off-the-shelf parts, which would get well over 200 miles on ethanol, gasoline, and other common chemical petroleum products. And it was squelched. It was actually going to be a Hollywood, massive Hollywood production starring a lot of well-known named stars and actresses in this thing. A friend of mine here, Andrew, gave me all the entire information on it. Gave all the serial number parts that you can go to a military surplus store, say, and get a certain component. Put all the stuff together. Voila, you got a car that can go well over 200 miles on a gallon of some kind of fuel. I mean, it would take different fuels. But again, all of that was squashed by the J.P. Morgans.
For those who do not know what we're referring to when we refer to J.P. Morgan, Tesla got J.P. Morgan to invest in the development of zero-point energy. Until Morgan asked him, how can you put a meter on this? And Tesla said, you can't. And J.P. Morgan dropped it like a hot potato, withdrew his funding, and it was pretty much over. But Tesla was ready to deploy this. He was ready to make it happen. And J.P. Morgan, more than any other single individual, J.P. Morgan is why you can't pay your bills. Okay? He's more responsible for that than any other single individual. He's not alone. There is a vast cadre of robber barons running the world. But he, more than any other individual, has caused you to be held hostage to oil. And it could, way back then, we could have been free from oil. Because Tesla was ready to deploy this. And J.P. Morgan said no. So, let me ask you, how do you plan to deal with J.P. Morgan?
How am I?
Mm-hmm.
I presented this already to some interesting investor types, Prince Hans Adam Liechtenstein, who I've known since 1989. Through a DVD on the latest developments, and he responded with a actual Christmas card. That's all. Oh, yeah. It's the Christmas card. A few others, a friend from Connecticut who knows the Rockefeller family, came out, was quite excited, and wanted Nancy to bring out a demonstration to show in New York, I guess, to Stephen Rockefeller. Nancy doesn't trust that family. I don't know them. I just hear about them. So, I don't know. That's. I think the answer lies more in how much media energy you can get out there on the on these topics through people like yourself, perhaps, that can broadcast it around the world and get people interested again.
Well, see, and we try every night. But, you know, one of the big problems that we encounter is that the mushroom media lamestream media.
Hmm.
Ridicule media like my show and others that deal with this. They ridicule inventors like you. They ridicule, had these idiots been around at the time of Tesla, they would have been ridiculing Tesla. And in fact, it was because of the New York, I believe it was the New York Times, but it was the New York media for sure. It was because of them that Tesla took his free energy, zero-point energy module that he had installed in that Pierce Arrow, which for those of you who don't know, that's an automobile. They ran it all over New York. The governor drove it. The mayor drove it. Congressman drove it. Everybody drove it. It was fabulous. But the media started ridiculing Tesla and saying that, well, he must be cavorting with the forces of darkness in order to be able to do this. And Tesla said, forces of darkness, huh? Okay, I'll show you darkness. And he took his box out of the car and took it back to his lab, and nobody ever saw it again. The blueprints are not around. And you don't have, folks, you don't have zero-point energy running your cars today, partially because of mushroom media.
I agree to that, and that also is applicable to T. Henry Moray, who had a similar device, that after a while he just got so fed up he just took his unit and smashed it all apart. Apparently somebody else smashed it apart, but he was asked by another friend of mine, Patrick Flanagan, can he build this? And T. Henry Moray said, no, I don't want to go through that again, basically. He came a very bitter, embittered man.
Well, so, I mean, let's go back and recount what has happened to you. I mean, you've had your lab broken into. You've had your lab basically stolen from you,
mm-hmm.
given to a large industrial company for their research. You've been promised grants that then died.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could just go on and on. What keeps you going?
Just my positive nature, I suppose. That's why I turned on the U.S. Pentagon in 2006. I said to the group, I said, no, I really don't want to go there. I want to just do this for television and news media. I think it's more helpful because it gets out there in a huge area. And a lot of kids, I have a lot of kids that are fans and want to develop Tesla coils and do some experiments that I've done. So one of my hit shows is Beyond Invention, which is all, if you Google Beyond Invention, a lot of hits on that.
All right, John, we have hit the end of the show. Uh-oh. I want to thank you for being here. It's been fun.
It's been a lot of fun. I thank you and for having me on your show.
All right. Folks, John Hutchison, I hope you have enjoyed this evening's show, and I hope you will tell all your friends, family, and even your enemies to tune in to the Kevin Smith Show each night this week. It's going to be orbital all week. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.